we start with other things. So most of us, we were confined in some of the meetings. It's only now we've been joined by some members. At the same time, for coincidentally, we have a few members who have sent their apologies to Mama Picha and Mamu Chema. But I do have a hope that other members will join us as the time goes on. But without wasting any time, I'd like us to introduce ourselves so that we can familiarize ourselves that we must know in this house at whom we're dealing with. Without wasting any time, I'll start from you at the back and on my left hand side. Yes, that's you.
Thank you very much.
Mike, please.
Thank you. My name is Kobodile Richard Dianki. I'm the advisor to Minister of Human Settlements.
Milile Khaba, Assistant to the Director General of Human Settlements.
Morning, members. My name is Thabane Zulu, DG Human Settlements.
Morning, Chairperson, members. My name is Neville Cheney, Deputy Director General, Operations, Department of Human Settlements.
Morning, Chair. My name is Nyameko Mbengo. I'm Acting CFO, Department of Human Settlements.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Victor Rajkumar from the Department of Human Settlements, National. I'm the Acting Chief Director for Sector Information Management.
Thanks, Chair. I'm Wesala Jacobs, a member of this committee representing the Free State.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Herman Groenewald, member of the committee representing the Northwest Province.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Bohle Tsana, Committee Assistant.
Good morning, Chair, and all the members of the committee. My name is Cornelius Schwartz. I am the monitor from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Dirk Fjordman, member of the committee, select committee from Gauteng.
Please
introduce yourself, please. Member of the committee.
Masibonge Mzwakali, I'm the committee clerk.
Without wasting any time, as I've indicated that as I also indicated to you about the apology, that some of the members will join us because we start from a different commitment within the parliament. And I'm happy that some of the members have fished up already. My name is Pat Sibande, the chairperson of the committee. And what I would request that is to give you the opportunity maybe to start, maybe to brief us on your annual report. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity and also for inviting our department to just give a brief highlight of the annual report for 2009-2010. We would like not to get into details. What we have decided to do for the purpose of efficiency for your meeting is to reflect on the highlights of the annual report that has been submitted to different members. I'll ask the Chief Operations Officer to take us through the presentation with your permission, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, the structure of the presentation just gives an indication of the aim, vision, mission of the department, the mandates, the refined model for delivery, the key challenges and trends, highlights of achievements, program achievements, financial performance and transfers.
In relation to the aims, vision, and mission, the aim of the department is to determine finance, promote, coordinate, communicate, and monitor policy in respect of housing and human settlements. The vision is a nation housed in sustainable human settlements, and the mission to facilitate an environment that provides sustainable human settlements. The strategic pillars on which the strategic plan and the annual report reflects is the mandated outcomes, the coordination and alignment in human settlements development, urbanization and spatial management, key service delivery priorities, shelter development governance, shelter development reforms, transformation of the paradigm shift, and the institutional realignment. Just in relation to outcome 8, we've just briefly indicated what that supposes, Chair, and we've indicated for the purposes of this financial year, the one that we're in, we'll report on that. The highlights of the achievement, a conceptual document on the implication of the name change from housing to human settlements was developed during the period under review. A beneficiary occupancy audit in 7 of the 9 provinces was completed. The department also undertook 3 impact evaluation studies to determine the impact of various housing programs on the lives of beneficiaries. And these programs that were evaluated were the rural housing program, the social and rental housing program, and the upgrading of informal settlements. The department also conducted project-level monitoring processes to verify and confirm delivery as by provincial human settlements departments. The department also initiated a process to develop a human settlements index for South Africa. There was also agreements entered into with the platinum mines for the rollout of projects in Limpopo and Northwest, as well as Intersite for joint development of land in and around railway stations. We also negotiated signing of agreements with the Department of Public Works to give the Department of Human Settlements the first right of refusal on land being considered for disposal. The National Upgrading Support Program has been established to provide support to municipalities. There's also been a project process guideline developed. The Housing Development Agency was made operational during the 2009-10 financial year. And in collaboration with the Rural Housing Loan Fund, there's also been an individual housing subsidy voucher scheme which is in the process of being finalized for implementation. But during the period under review, the development of that voucher scheme was finalized. A process to develop standard and uniform business processes based on documented delivery was initiated. And then the municipal accreditation program was accredited by the assessment of 6 metropolitan municipalities and 4 district councils. In the international arena, there was the department was represented at AMCA, which is the African Ministerial Conference on Housing, the Urban Development and World Urban Forum. It was a strategic exercise undertaken during 2009 and January 10, which incorporated IT, fraud, risk, and strategic risk assessment, and the department identified, evaluated, and allocated responsibility for managing and controlling risk inherited to the department. The composition of the Risk Management Committee has been reviewed in line with national treasury frameworks, and the department has an independent non-executive member who chairs the Risk Management Committee. The Chief Director in Audit has managed to execute work as per approved operational internal audit plan, and it was found that the department has adequate systems of internal control, risk management, and governance processes. However, the effectiveness of these processes were found to require strengthening and to be more effective. There was monitoring of external cases being investigated by the Special Investigating Unit in terms of the presidential proclamation. What is reflected on this slide, Chair, members, is the legislation that's the sectional title Schemes Management Bill the Community Schemes Ombuds Services Bill, the draft rental housing regulations, the draft social housing regulations, and then there were also a number of individual and organizational inputs on the two bills that we received, and that was the sectional title of Management Bill and the Community Schemes Ombuds Service Bill. The draft legal compliance manual was finalized, and the process of identifying suitable software service provider to assist in the conducting of legal compliance was carried out. The new national housing code was also aligned with the housing policy and was approved by MINMEC and the minister in February 2009. The farm residence housing assistance program was approved by MINMEC and incorporated into the new national housing code, and there's also a framework for a housing program for persons with special housing needs was completed, but there's still consultation to finalize that. And then the draft framework for inclusionary housing policy was reviewed, and there will be further consultations held in September 2009, and the findings of this consultation will be consolidated and the policy hopefully adopted during the course of 2010 and the review process. The FLIS program is also being reviewed, and that indicates in conjunction with the NHSC together with the Banking Association. We've also undertaken processes to promote the housing code and policy advice to stakeholders, and regional workshops are held with all provinces and their respective municipalities. And included in these engagements were the various provinces, municipalities, and SAGA. What we've indicated here, Chair, is just in relation to the, as per the annual report that's been submitted to yourself and the members, we've just indicated the annual performance in terms of targets not achieved, and performance not to be determined, and the percentage achieved. All in all, in relation to the overall performance of the department, there were a total of 253 targets set. There were 180 targets met. Targets not achieved was 11. Partially achieved was 19. Performance not determined was 43. And the overall percentage in terms of targets set against what was achieved was 71%. That just gives a graphic indication of what the targets versus not achieved was. That's again the pie graph. And the financial performance, Chair, Mr. Mbengu will take us through that.
Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Lens, I know you are more than welcome. We're waiting for some of you. Thank you.
The slide check gives an overview picture of the financial performance of the department. In total, the adjusted allocation for the department was 13.604 billion, allocated to five programs of the department. The actual expenditure for the whole department amounted to 13.370 billion, leaving 234 million unspent. The total expenditure against the allocated budget, the adjusted allocation, was 98%. If you look at the various programs here, you will notice that there are various percentages or performance levels of various programs, with program one standing at 68% of what was allocated, program two standing at 67% of what was allocated, program three at 58%, and program four almost the whole amount, and program five standing at 76%. I just want also, just before getting into the reasons for underspending, to actually indicate to the committee that if you look at amount allocated for Program 4 amounts to 13.033 billion. That amount includes the grant, the human settlement grant, which was transferred to the provinces. I want to link this slide to this one of transfers to provinces. You will notice here that the total amount of the grant transferred was 12.592 billion, allocated to all the 9 provinces as indicated. In addition to that, Chair, you will notice that right at the bottom of the first column, Division of Revenue Act column, right at the bottom there is 150 million, which was allocated to KwaZulu-Natal as a disaster relief fund. That amount is just in addition of the Human Settlement Development Grant, giving you a total of 12.592 billion. If you move across here to actual transfers, you will notice that the actual transfers were 100%. All the amount allocated was transferred to various provinces. And if you notice on the second column, the next column indicates the amount spent by various provinces. The total check is 12.325 compared to the 12.592, giving you a total percentage of 98% spent by provinces. You'll notice on the last column, it gives an indication of the percentage spent by provinces compared to the actual allocation. That check gives a total picture of what was transferred to the provinces, what they spent, as against what was allocated to them in the form of the grant transferred by the national department. I'll just go back to the reasons for underspending. As I've already indicated, there was underspending in the department, and there were various reasons why we ended up not spending the whole amount. The main first reason was cost-saving measures. These measures resulted in savings mainly on goods and services. The majority of these savings were realized by cutting back on traveling and subsistence expenditure. Underspending also was a result of delay by the special investigating unit in invoicing us. They actually invoiced us a bit late in the last month, and we ended up paying in the new year. Another factor which contributed to underspending was a delay in securing additional building for the department, which resulted in funds provided for leasing and refurbishment of offices not spent during the financial year. Non-availability of additional office space also resulted in non-filling of vacant positions because of non-availability of space. In addition, Chair, another reason was an amount set aside for that program. However, the unfortunate thing was that the approval for that program could not be actually secured within the financial year. As a result, that money could not be spent. Also, we didn't appoint the Office of Disclosure. The members could not be appointed on time during the financial year, and that also resulted into under expenditure. Another reason, Chair, was the fact that the department was in the process of establishing a new public entity called the Social Housing Regulatory Authority. That process took a bit longer. There was a delay, and as a result, the amount of money budgeted to be transferred to that public entity could not be transferred during the financial year. Lastly, Chair, we also had a challenge with the CETA, in the sense that they had a challenge in invoicing us during the financial year, and as a result, they ended up invoicing us very late, and the information they gave us was that their data management system crashed in March and they couldn't invoice us. And as a result, we couldn't pay them before the end of the financial year. And at that year, I would hand over to the Chief Operations Officer regarding statistics on delivery, on housing delivery to throughout the country.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, my apologies. We're just making one copy, a copy of the provincial targets. So, I think the point we need to sort of want to illustrate from here on is that in relation to the 13 billion that's been, or the 12.5 billion that was allocated and the amount spent by the department in terms of transfers, what did that buy in relation to the target? In relation to the provincial and the national business plan, the original target in terms of sites, that's sites for servicing, that's with water, sanitation, and tenure. The target, the overall target that the department had set together with the provinces was 56,613. Chair, we'll hand out we're just making copies of this. And then in relation to houses, it was 160,159. Overall, the target that was set initially was 216,000 stands and houses. The delivery figures that at the time when we had submitted the report, that figure had stood at the delivery had stood at 226,216, made up of 64,000 stands and 161,000 houses. And the provincial breakdown, we'll hand that out. So you'll be able to, members of the committee will be able to have an idea. But I'll just go through it. In relation to the Eastern Cape, the
honourable member.
The gentleman is referring to. No, but you should be having it. You cannot just explain on something that you don't have.
Okay.
Cancer is coming. We need it right now so that when he speaks, we are able to make reference to what he's saying.
Honourable members, I think when I understood it very well, you are with me?
Yes.
Okay, fine. When he started to report about this, he said they are still busy. They will disseminate that information of the breakdown of the provinces. I don't know when or what. Now. You mean now? Okay. That's why the members are bitter, because they need that information. Our challenge is one. We're supposed to go and be directly involved in the provinces. So, for an example, a few days to come, we're about to leave, to take in Parliament to the people. And some of this information will help us. I think your concern is taken, Baba. And then their apology is that they are waiting for somebody who's busy with these documents. They will dish out for us before they leave. I'll propose that maybe we continue. We note what to our concern while we're still waiting for those information to come.
Thanks, Chair. I'll just go through this and then I'll come back to this point when the document is with us.
Okay.
Just in relation to challenges, Chair, members of the committee, we put forward the following so that we can just perhaps for ourselves together with the committee, just in relation to some of the challenges, and I know some of these things have come forward and there's a commitment on all our parts to resolve this. The following human settlements challenges remain, and notwithstanding the achievements, the system's challenges, the quality of human settlements created, the issue of lack of services, particularly in relation to people without and communities without services, land availability, and market dynamics. The 2.2 million backlog, the approximate figure requires 102 billion in relation to servicing and land costs. But also in relation to the land availability and the land dynamics. There's relegating the poor to the urban periphery, there's the subsidy constraints, building material and inflationary pressures, misalignment of funding streams, that is the link between bulk as well as our Millennium Development Targets, and the human settlements functions and their locations. The challenge for us to be able to consolidate all this into a department and bring the department to be able to realize those outcomes. The program challenges, there's a mushrooming of informal settlements and we're aware of that. There's disasters, floods and fires which impacts on that. Skills and capacity constraints within the sector. And particularly the fact that working in the human settlement sector is not seen as an inverted commas as sexy. So there's a shift of engineers and project managers to want to work within your commercial and your retail sector, which is sometimes considered to be more lucrative. Then there's building material inflationary pressures. The beneficiary management challenges include the poor quality of houses, and that's been addressed with the NHBRC. There's the issue of blocked projects, particularly where contracts get signed, the subsidy amounts are found not to be sufficient, the waiting list management, and these are issues that the committee will probably pick up in your visits to the communities in the various provinces. Title deed transfers, the discount benefit scheme, reporting on housing delivery on the HSS, the ability to get provinces to actually input onto the housing subsidy system so that we have accuracy of figures. Then there's also the issue of fraud and corruption in housing delivery. Rapid urbanization and migration, that's the rural to urban migration, population growth, household formation and diminishing size. Chair, between 1994 and as we said today, household formation has the average household has dropped from an average of 4.4 to 3.1, which means although your household formation has also then impacted on your backlog. Informal settlement growth, lack of access to basic services, the unbalanced property markets, and then the unsustainable development choices. Just in relation to basic services, currently there's 3.95 million households that still require access to water. There's approximately 3.2 million households that require access to sanitation. There's 2.6 million households that require access to energy. And then there's also approximately 4.56 million households that are unserved with refuse removal. Urbanization and demographic trends. There's the dual residence issue around families or individuals who maintain a rural base and then also seek employment or temporary accommodation in urban areas. And I think what we fail to do in South Africa is recognize that's a feature of our households and consider that in our planning. What we need to also agree on is that urbanization is irreversible and growing and we need to manage it. There's been urban consolidation since the 1960s. Informal settlements are largely addressless. This is another shackle in residence inclusion. And I think the point Chair, here is that how do we ensure that our policies are inclusionary to the poor and they're friendly? The adage that we want to use is that we must attack poverty and not attack the poor. The phenomenon of the shifting target in delivery of services, structural unemployment and informality, I mean, the old issue. The economic downturn, which has impacted on the sector, and that's the diminishing access to housing finance, particularly credit, which allows people to then not rely on only the state. There's diminishing bulk infrastructure spare capacity, and this is an issue that will come up in your visit, that there's a number of projects that also have been blocked as a result of bulk infrastructure. So that impacts on figures and that impacts on targets. Social and geographical disparities, the inequality, the input costs, that's construction, materials versus costs versus capacity, and the built environment governance nexus. And that concludes where we are at the moment. Shall take up the provincial breakdown as soon as it's just a one pager.
Okay, but I would be very much grateful if you can indicate for us that how long is it going to take, because some of this information within that document, which will form part of the questions from the members.
Okay.
Is it possible to find out first? Okay. Honourable members. Honourable members, here's the presentation or the briefing from the Department of Human segment. And then I would like to give members an opportunity to start to ask questions or clarity seeking, or if any recommendations as well. Honourable members? Okay, start at the back. Honourable Feldman, followed by Honourable Member Groenewald. Who else? Honourable Dow. Who else? Honourable Jacobs. Who else?
Second round.
Okay, fine. Honourable Feldman. The platform is yours.
Thank you, Chair. I don't want to say too much, but all I want to say is that I don't know how many times this department come and grieve us, and every time it's just another phrase, but it's the same thing. They're just challenges and targets and so on. There's nothing materialized or nothing positive or result of coming to forth. I mean, if they can just elaborate on what was achieved. I mean, we stuck every time at the same place, organization, all that. Thank you, Chair.
I think that will be the comment, open for another members maybe to come up with questions, please.
Thank you, Chair. If we are looking at page 10, and I want to know the Risk Management Committee. You made mention of it, and you said that there has been reviewed in line with National Treasury Framework. And that is all on paper. I want to know what success they have. Because if we are looking into the different provinces, and that is in all the provinces in South Africa, but especially in the province where I come from, the Northwest province, I asked these questions previous times in the House. I put in on written questions, and the answers I've got means nothing, because that is promises being made by the department all the time. And I will give you examples. In Rustenburg, they built 500 houses. I think that the amount was 500 million at the end of the day. And very few of that houses is being occupied by people. The most of these houses are falling apart. That is bad construction. There's no cement being used in a lot of these houses. And it is dangerous for people to get into that houses. In Freiburg, they paid the contractor a huge amount forward. And at the end of the day, only four houses was being built. And I think it was 27 million is gone, down the drains. Koster, these houses standing now for a couple of years. I think it is 30 houses. It's never been occupied. It's half-built houses. The grass is overgrowing the houses. And people is starting break that houses down and carry the bricks and things away. And all these things is about management. And now you've said the management that you received in line with National Treasury. Then I can't see where's the control at the end of the day. There's no control over the build of houses. And then, Honorable Chair, I want to know, maybe that is in the next slide you are going to give us, is how many houses have been built in South Africa in the past year. I want to know exactly how many, and I want also to know, if you can't give it to us now, you can do it on a later page by writing, in each province. And what is the amount allocated for houses in each province? Because we have it here on paper, and now if I look into this one on page, page 27, it is 100% and 98% being spent at the end of the budget year. But the houses which are built in the provinces are not saying that. So I want to know, where is this money going to? And I see what you said, there's a lot of challenges, but all these things, at the end of the day, is about planning. What is the planning from point A, from they started, when they got the land, where they are going to build the houses, up to the point where they deliver the houses to the people? I don't think there's proper planning. And I believe there's enough space. You said you've got a problem with land. Maybe in the urban areas, but in our rural areas, that is where the problem is. That is the people who haven't got get the houses, and there's enough land. There's no problem with land, with land, and the infrastructure. A lot of these houses are being built in different places without infrastructure. And I want to give you an example where things is going very, very well at this stage, and that is Wolmaranstad. You must go and visit Wolmaranstad and see what do planning. They planned it very properly, and they put in infrastructure before they start building a single house. They've got tar roads there, they've got water, they've got sewage infrastructure, everything is in place. Then they start building houses, and it is neat, and it is beautiful, and the people love it. Maybe we must use Wolmaranstad. It's a small town, but we must use that as an example. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Member Dow.
Thank you very much, Chair. Maybe I'm looking at two documents here. One is the presentation and a quick look at the detail. Annual report document. Being jealous of our mandate, just two quick questions. On your outcome 8, page 5, bullet point 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The accreditation of municipalities. It would be interesting to know which municipalities are these and which provinces are these municipalities. I am aware that it is written, when I look at the details, it says metros and district municipalities. So it would be important to know which districts. Metros 1 would assume that IO presently constructed metros and so forth. And then on your page 7, Chair, there is your last bullet, still on page 5, the release of 6,250 hectares of public land, including provinces and municipalities. It would be quite interesting to know where, so that if it is happening in my province, that I must be able to go and do oversight and check whether if it is true that has happened. And then on your page 7, the department having entered into an agreement with Platinum Mines for possible rollout of projects in Limpopo and Northwest, intersite for joint developments of land in and around railway stations and the CBSA for technical support on priority and block projects. It would be quite interesting to get the detail of this. because I would want to know, if you say in Limpopo, where exactly in Limpopo? Because there are some municipalities that one would have really appreciated to go back and say to them, here is this particular agreement that the Department of Human Settlement has entered into with the Platinum Mines. And we know of many municipalities in the Limpopo area and in the Northwest area where there's a lot of mining taking place there. We were there, I don't know if you mentioned it, in March, taking Parliament to the people. And there were serious commitments that were made by the mining houses in those particular municipalities, and particularly the rural areas. There are serious commitments that these mining houses have committed themselves to. It would be interesting to know which areas were, so that we are then able to link our program of doing oversight, because we still have to go back to Limpopo to check whether if those commitments that were made by those mining houses are being realized or implemented. So that detail is quite important for us as the committee. Just for interest sake, Chair, I would really want to know how much is the housing agency funded, and whether if the agency is up and running now as we speak, whether if the agency in terms of its mandate has acquired land or has identified land, or is in actual fact doing exactly what it was established for. It would be quite interesting. And if there are some challenges, we would be quite assisted by being given those kind of challenges that are being identified. Then, Chair, I want to speak to this other document now, your detailed document. It's a pity that we, let me not say we, let me speak to myself. It's only now that I got this document. And a quick browse. My old song, Leratong Park in the Northern Cape. It is reported that 50% of the road construction or access road is complete. 50%, 2009-2010. A song that we have been singing since 2004, 2005, with the implementation of the N2 Gateway, Leratong Park was one amongst those identified after the N2 Gateway as a national pilot project. Leratong Park was identified in the Northern Cape. But today, the report says only 50% of an access road for that matter. No further details to say, but exactly what are the bottlenecks in the Leratong Park, except to say I saw somewhere it's on a fellow to do and here's the legacy, someone who can back me up. a legal matter. Easier. So it would be quite important to know exactly what is happening in that particular area. And I'll tell you why. No, let me not get there. But just to indicate that we are seen, or we are being presented as the greatest liars in front of, or in the eyes of our people. We have gone to the Raton Park, we were given progress reports, we were given all these sorts of things. We reported back. I don't know this kind of a report. What is it that I can go to the people of the Raton Park? What am I going to say to them? Because my party is going to expect me again to go and mobilize those people to participate in the local government elections next year. What is it that I'm going to tell them? Because I'll be telling them the whole story again and even make it worse to them to say that, no, but 50% of your access road has been completed. When in actual fact, our people are saying, not only 50%, you had come the last time to us and said the department had entered into an agreement with the bank, with the municipality. There is a clear plan, there is a program, there was a board set up there, you know, laying out the design of the kind of area that our people are going to have. Today I'll be telling them about the 50% road access. Are we fair? Thanks.
Honorable member, before I give it to Comrade, I reminded me something, a story in those former homelands, how they were using those things. For an example, to say, I'll put you water. I'll definitely show votes for me. Then they will put a tap. Goes on without water. I promise you that I'll put water. They said, no, but there are taps, there's nothing. They started to open water, and those water will be selective. Maybe particular time will get the water, particular time won't get water. We must refrain from all those things. Let me open for Baba Jacobs, maybe.
Yeah. Thanks, Chair. I think Comrade Tawi is fortunate to have that detailed document, because I don't even have it with me here. It is just that the presentation that we receive right now. But the other issue that I want to raise is the issue of acronyms. They are using so many acronyms that we are not used to here. So we have always said there must be footnotes for acronyms so that we should make reference, and that has not been done. And then taking from what Honorable Feldman has said, that year in, year out, we are getting the same thing. I think it will be important that we need to have a table for comparison, so that we should know the previous year, this is what we achieved the previous year, this is what we have achieved this year, so that we must be able to make comparison whether there is movement or if there is stagnation. So I think that's important. And on the issue of, that was raised by Honorable Tawi, on the issue of accreditation, I think the movement is very slow. 6 metropolitans and 4 district councils. We've got so many district councils. We've got so many municipalities. I think we need to speed up that process to accredit municipalities. If there is weaknesses, I think we need to capacitate them, because I think that is another issue which can try to ease what we have, the corruption that we have, and also the manner in which we deliver the houses to people. Because I was also going to say there's something here to say the houses that are built, they're not of good quality. Whether do we have inspectors who are inspecting those houses when they are finished, or if they've just been given to people without any inspection that has been done. I think especially it should be done by the department. I was also very much interested in these cases that I've been investigated by a special investigating unit. If you could know which are those areas where this investigation has been made. And also
there is this issue of the farm resident housing assistance program. Maybe if you could also get clarity, because we, in our areas, we are having many farms which could also assist our people if it's a program that has been made available to people. On the issue of performance, program performance, on there's unspent and spent. But the dodge, this side we find it's 68%, this side is 53%. And if you add them together, they give 100 and something. But we always we should be working over 100%. So I don't understand, this side is 53% unspent, but this side, it gives you 68%, which has been spent. So I don't think it's correct. Maybe we can get explanation of that so that we should know exactly what is happening. On these transfers to provinces, just that it's unfortunate because the Auditor General's report, we are going to get it this afternoon. Because if you say, for instance, the first state, division of revenues was 962, is it million or billion, I don't know. And now, that money was transferred. And when you come to the amount that was spent, it is exactly 962.75. I don't know whether there is truth in that. That it can be exactly that amount that was spent. And it's unfortunate that we can't verify where it was spent, because I think it's important that we need to know where it was spent so that when we go there, we must be able to identify all these things that you have raised and said, it was spent on this and it was spent on that. The other issue of is a rapid urbanization and migration from rural areas to urban areas. I don't know whether the department has the capacity to make a research to look where is this movement, from which place to another place. Because I think when we are issuing out money, when you are giving people money, you should know where this money is going to be spent to. Because we cannot give money to an area where there is no need for housing. Because it must go, the allocation must go with the need of houses. But I think it's important that we need to have research and know exactly that there's a movement from this place to this place. And therefore, as a result of that, where the money is allocated where there is a need. Because if we don't do that, this is exactly what we will be always having informal settlement, because we wouldn't be having enough money to accommodate those people. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before I open for you maybe to respond, I wanted to add one or two. Yeah, we'll give a second round, Chief.
There's a delegation of Namibia, and I'm being given the task to host it. And
okay.
I won't sleep well.
Okay, fine.
Okay. Just two things, or three maybe. You see, I forgot to raise this thing. I find it quite interesting that the department has been able to sign an agreement with the Department of Public Works on the disposal of land. But it doesn't tell us more in relation to, you see, the issues that the honourable member was raising earlier on the question of the tribal land, the availability in the rural areas, when we know very well that in most cases you would find that this land is owned by the tribal authorities or the chiefs and so forth. What moves have been made by the department to engage with the authorities at that particular level to make land available for development? Because that will also then be linked with addressing one pillar, because if you look at what informs this threat plan, one of the reference documents that has been spoken to is the manifesto of the African National Congress. And in that manifesto of the ANC, there's one critical element that then comes out very sharply, rural development. And one would assume that that level of engagement, not only to be limited to the DP, Department of Public Works, but how then do you link that kind of strategic engagement also with the tribal authorities for the disposal of land or making land available for human settlement and so forth, to avoid or to address the issue of this migration of our people from the rural areas to the urban areas, therefore addressing the question of rural poverty and rural economic development. The next issue then, Chair, would be in the strategic plan 2010, 2011, or 2009, 2010, I can't just remember very well, but the then acting DG, who is now with Defense, reported that one of the strategic approaches that the department would be engaging in to address the issue of provinces being focused on their mandate on human settlement is the ring fencing of conditional grants dispatched to provinces. Maybe it is here in the detailed report, I might not have seen it, but if it is there, can we be told how far that progress, how far that process is being implemented? If it is working, are you getting resistance from provinces and so forth? Because we know the kind of challenges that provinces would always raise when it comes to matters of this nature. And then lastly, Chair, I might not also have been privy to the detail, the policy on the size of houses. The minister has made some pronouncements, but we are not sure whether if there is uniformity throughout the country as we speak now in terms of size of houses that are being constructed. I've seen the one in the Free State led by the Premier, Operation Sasela, in one of the districts. In actual fact, it went beyond the 40 square, what the Premier was doing in the Free State. So it would be important to know whether if there is a national policy, there's uniformity, or does it depend on what a province wants to do? Thanks, Chair. That would be those that will make me sleep tonight.
Okay. Before I give it to the department, I wanted one or two more so that maybe we satisfy ourselves. You see, to the department, there are issues I want to add on what we must be asking. The question which I like to ask myself is that first question, whether at the current arrangement, are our systems able to speak to each other? While I'm raising that, our members were very concerned about the issue of the risk management, whether what I will add on that one with the risk management. See, it is alleged that some of the constructors were involved in causing all these flaws. And it's very simple for a person, let's say in Mpumalanga, your project is not finished, and you got a lot of bugs from the department. You go to Northern Cape, because it's a tiny, small province. Yes. It's vast, of course. And then go there. Also, you are given another opportunity. If our systems speak to each other, it's very simple to detect those particular activities. And then also with the issue of the risk management, my concern, if you can maybe highlight for us that who constitutes your risk management? Because sometimes when you do this structure, some people are supposed to be involved. They're not involved. They give to some managers in the office, while the key people are supposed to be involved, they're not involved. And when was it rearranged or revamped? And then another thing is that there's something which is worrying me. with the money which you call, you refer to the document unspent. I don't know whether I can call it a rollover. See, the concern is one. Maybe some of the people, maybe some of you are very happy on seeing some of the people are protesting so much. Because a lot of people are not protesting for the department, but they are protesting to a certain party. As if it is them who created 1, 2, 3. While there's money which was given to you, which is not being utilized because of the reasons you gave us, delay of a special investigating, securing addition building for the department, all these things, it doesn't hold water to us. Maybe if you can tell us exactly what is the problem. And again, on the challenges, yes, I'm happy who Honourable Member Dawood raised the issue of using maybe a communication after you made an agreement with between the Department of Yourself and the Department of Public Works, and also you raised the issue of traditional leadership. You see, the issue of availability of the land, where it started, is that have you managed to do a proper auditing? Because this thing, I know, it falls to other departments as well. Which the land which is available for us as part of the human segment. I'll put a practical example. It was alleged that in some of the areas where the army base, I think in the northern Cape, if I'm not mistaken, a big army base which was there, and some of the land even now is not being utilized. Why are we supposed to talk about it? Which can assist some people, not there only, in the various provinces, there are a lot of unused land. Because if you do a proper auditing, it will assist you in terms of developing in some of the particular areas, or involve or to take some people on board in order to assist ourselves. And also, there is a thing which was raised by Honorable Member Dow, which is worrying me. He spoke about the pilot project, which are still incomplete in Leratomes in particular. But there are a lot of projects which just disappeared. Here in Cape Town, and Davizita, the issue of N2 Gateway. Nobody is concerned, is left alone. Some of the houses were built halfway, and west part of it is in the forefront of anybody who's going to airport, whatever. Anybody who's coming or going out in Cape Town, whether you are driving or flying. Nothing is said about in terms of the budget and the like, and some of the directives from part of human segment. Where do you put the people? Maybe if you can make us maybe a summary of some of the projects which we just left while in the department, which we under the Department of Human Segment. We know that human segment, the term human segment is a new term. But since you took over, what have you done so much to make sure that some of those particular projects are completed or are being finished? Because those are some of these challenges whereby some of the things, the government have used huge monies, but those billions of rands disappeared. And to stick also the issue of the size of the houses, that one is very important as well. I don't say other things are not important. I mean, those are thorny issues. Thorny issues whereby they can be very attractive maybe to assist in alleviating of this thing of areas without housing. I'll reserve some of these things, and then maybe I'll come also in a second round. I'll give it to the department to start maybe to respond to some of these questions.
Maybe, Chair, with your permission, can we then go back to that one page that outlines some of the deliverables for different provinces now that it's available, and then after that we look into the questions and comments raised by
members. Let me consult the members first. the department is requesting that maybe they go through the document which was not here before they start responding to the question. Is that accepted? To go through the documents very quick and come back to us with questions. Can you give them a permission to do that? Yeah? It's taken, Chief.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the on the first page, we've just indicated the basic information. I'll just sorry that the pages are not, but this one here, it gives an indication of what the current backlogs are in relation to the various provinces, so that's the Eastern Cape, Free State, Gauteng, KZN, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, Northwest, Western Cape. That's what the current housing need is, and that's based on the projections and estimates. Then the informal settlements in relation to the various provinces, we've outlined that. Then the information in terms of the next page is what is the how many informal settlements have been identified for upgrading, how many have been completed, how many in progress. Then the next page, we've just given an indication of what the employment rate is in terms of our stats SA release in terms of 2010. And then what we do then is we indicate for 2009-10, that's the year under which we review, what was the grant allocation, and that was what the total was. And then the provincial expenditure, and that excluded the disaster relief. The next page, Chair, gives the indication, and you'll see the first block, and that's this document, this page here. The first block, that was what was the department on an annual basis received what is called provincial housing department business plans. And from those business plans, that is what the various provinces said they would deliver. So in Eastern Cape, the business plan said they would deliver 11,670 stands, that's sites, that's water sanitation and title. They would build 19,748, and then the target that was then put forward for the total for that year was 31,418. The national total for sites was 56,613, and houses was 160,159. And then you get the total figure in relation to what the provincial housing. That was then revised, and these revisions take place on a quarterly basis by the provinces, and there's a number of reasons why this happens. Tender prices might be lower. Block projects might come out. There's a number of reasons, and those reasons are normally provided by the provinces. But what the delivery figure for, I mean, the final delivery figure for 2009-2010, for Eastern Cape, there was 11,327 sites delivered, 18,965 houses constructed, giving you a total of 30,292. The same for the Free State. In essence, for South Africa, in terms of the total stands delivered was 64,362, and the total houses constructed during the course of last year, for the financial year 1st April 2009 to 31 March 2010, was 161,854 houses, giving us an overall total of 226,216 houses that were constructed, houses and stands that were constructed. The next page, that stands for stands.
Right.
Yeah, site.
1895.
That's houses constructed. Superstructures, yeah.
Okay.
And then we what we what department is we just try and ensure that through our systems, because sometimes through your payment cycles and stuff like that, so you'll see the 09, the housing delivery, and the figure that we've put in terms of houses and service sites completed was 226216. That's. And I hope that I think what we want to be able to demonstrate to the committee and the chair is that from the money that was given, and that's the important point in relation to the financial information, and you'll see as we've indicated here, in relation to the Division of Revenue Act, in terms of the Integrated Human Settlements Grant, that's transfers to provinces for construction and development of integrated human settlements, that stands, as well as houses constructed, there was an amount of 12.5 billion that was given to the department to distribute to the provinces. What was transferred was 12.592276. What was then spent by the department in terms of the provinces and ourselves was 12.3. So what we indicated in that figure is that for the 12.3 billion rand that was given to the department to distribute and allocate to the provinces, 226,216 houses and service stands were delivered. So that was the figures that was done. I'm not sure. Then in relation to some of the points that were raised by the, and I'll go through them and we'll deal with them as a collective. I think in relation to one of the issues raised, and I think what we need to reiterate, the human settlements stroke housing function is a concurrent function between the department, between the national department and provinces. And we work within the legislative framework that allows us to do that. And particularly if one has recourse to the Housing Act. The Housing Act is quite specific in terms of giving the developer implementation role to provinces and municipalities. So the national department exercises a policy oversight monitoring and a funding framework facilitation, so we oversight. And this annual report that we've presented gives you as committee members what has occurred and what has transpired at the national department level. And particularly in relation to the AG's report, for example, we have received unqualified audit. What it doesn't do is, as members will be aware of, at the provincial level, you've got provincial audits and there's provincial annual reports that get that. And it might be something that we might want to consider particularly, or you might want to consider as members of this committee, for us to then come with respective provinces and give you a detailed indication. Because I think what we don't want to be doing is undermining the intergovernmental and the interspherical roles, responsibilities, accountabilities, and obligations. Not that we're saying as the National Department and the DG will indicate that we take full accountability of that. In relation to the Risk Management Committee, the Risk Management Committee, during the previous financial year, there was identified that particularly branch heads, and branch heads are referred to Deputy Director General. So what has happened is that it's now mandatory for Deputy Director General respectively, together with the DG, to attend the Risk Management Committee. And that's what happens. And that Risk Management Committee then undertakes the entire responsibility to manage the issues of risk, compliance, and compliance with the PFMA. So that's how it's been. And from the time that both the DG and I started, I can On the issue that was raised by I think it was Member Bomaraz in relation to the Northwest, what I can give the commitment, Chair, is that we'll take these points around the question. But I think what we want to be able to indicate is that in relation to the Freiburg, the Costa, and the other issues in relation to the Northwest around block projects, you will be aware of the fact that the department has engaged and there's been two proclamations that's been undertaken under the direction of the minister for the SIU. And one of the things that's coming under the radar, particularly that the SIU has been to look at the issue of contractor fraud, contractor project manipulation, and corruption that occurs. So issues of where contractors are given a project, utilize the money inefficiently and ineffectively, and then walk off the project, poorly built houses. So that, and I can confirm, Chair, that investigation is at a very sensitive stage, because one of the issues around contractors is you're dealing with these big syndicates. But the SIU has been given this. They've gone to each of the 9 provinces. They're pulling out contractor files, and they're looking at for that. And these the ones in the Northwest will receive the attention. And if you want, I'm sure that a briefing from the SIU will not be a problem. On the outcome 8, we've indicated that in relation to the 27 municipalities, it's the 6 metropolitan municipalities and the 21 large towns and cities. So it will include in each of the and it's municipalities in terms of either district or local municipalities, and I can give members and we can send that to you, Chair, for distribution on which are those that are identified, because the point is that those municipalities in terms of accreditation get identified by the provinces and the respective MECs. And that's an issue that we then undertake a compliance audit. But I think, again, not that we want to run away from our responsibilities. It's our duty to ensure that cooperative governance receives that. So in terms of identification of which municipalities or get accredited or get considered for accreditation, it's a matter that gets consulted upon with the respective provinces, and that's dependent on capacity, the ability, the functionality of those municipalities. So it depends on whether the municipality, because I think the issue is we don't want to do that. But I'll get a full list of that. On the public land, currently, in terms of the outcome 8, Minister Sekgole has signed a performance agreement with the minister, and that agreement was signed in April. Part of that agreement says that we, as government, led by the Department of Human Settlements, must release 6,250 hectares of net land for human settlement development. There's delivery agreements that are being concluded with the Minister of Rural Development, Public Works, Public Enterprises. Part of that process is that together with the Housing Development Agency, there's an audit that's been undertaken of all the public land. And we've indicated and given a report, and we can confidently say that before the end of this financial year, and we can come back and report to yourselves, Chair, on what exactly those portions of land have been found suitable, because not all public land suitable. What we want to be able to do is find, and it's not only land, it includes some buildings because it includes some of the parastatals. In relation to the issue related to the agreements with the platinum mines, there is a specific agreement that's been signed with Impala Flats, and in fact 3 weeks ago there was a public launch of a project by the minister in conjunction with Impala Flats in Rustenburg, but we'll give you a written indication of which those agreements, and we can give you copies of that. In relation to the HDA is up and running. There's a strategic plan that has been approved, and at the current process, until such time as the entire land process has been quantified, we're providing an operational budget for the HDA to undertake its activities. On Lerato Park, Chair, I think Member Tao's point around this is that I think, I mean, I don't want to play with semantics, and I will give you a full report, and we can come back and say, because I think the one disadvantage all of us is that this is contained in the 2009-10 report, and there has been substantial. But what we can indicate, particularly in the Salt Lake municipality, there is an issue related to bulk. And that bulk not only affects the Lerato Park, but it in fact affects the entire sort of Salt Lake district. In fact, Chair, there's a huge amount of bulk infrastructure deficiencies or lack thereof, which is impacting on projects and the delivery of human settlements throughout the country. Eastern Cape, KZN, Gauteng, it's a countrywide problem, which we are busy managing and dealing with the Department of Cooperative Governance. And just to add, Minister Sekhwale has also signed a delivery agreement for cooperative governance to provide that funding through the MIG. We know that Lerato Park has been, I think it's 5 years now, that there's been a whole range of commitments and we haven't, but the big issue here is the bulk infrastructure. The problem that we have as the Department of Human Settlements is that we continually get requests to fund bulk from the Integrated Human Settlements Grant. I think what we need to be able to alert members is that if we do that, it then means the money that we need to use for servicing of stands and construction of houses diminishes. And the point is, bulk infrastructure is not something that should be funded from the grant. But it's an inherited legacy around the fact that there hasn't been sufficient investment in terms of water, in terms of sanitation, in terms of electricity, in terms of bulk. I think, Member Tao might be aware of the fact, but I mean, Kimberley, in Salt Lake District, there's been entire residential and commercial developments come to a bit of a standstill because you can't get connected to water, and electricity, I think, has reached its peak. The other point is that we also need to indicate the percentage of the Northern Cape funds in terms of its allocation is also very small, and the province its resources are thinly spread, and it's an issue that perhaps maybe the committee through the processes in terms of allocations we're looking at. In relation to the comparisons, we can give members a comparison of over a number of years what has been delivered in terms of houses, in terms of numbers, but it's been consistently around 220 thereabouts. On the ring fencing of the grant, what we can indicate, Chair, is that each province, based on a formula that's agreed and determined with those provinces through MINMEC, gets allocated a specific amount. So if you look at the slide up there, in terms of the division of revenue, that allocation formula gets applied to the 12.5 million, and when it gets applied to that 12.5 million, that's what each province gets utilized or that. And that's a matter that continually gets revised, and I think as members you're aware that there's a huge amount of debate around urban and I think what we need to be able to do is strike the balance, and that's what that allocation formula says. It takes into consideration migration, poverty levels, backlog, services, all those factors. The size of the houses, in terms of the BNG policy, the minimum as we sit here is, and as I've indicated, the minimum is 40 square meters. So if a province wants to then build and has access to funding, it can build. So in the Free State, they're building 50 square meters. But we as the department have set the minimum standard in terms of quality of that. I think what it does is that there's this whole debate that's coming up around access to services versus houses, the depth versus breadth. Do we get lots of people or do we confine it? And that's the one issue that we have. The land agreement with Public Works, we've indicated there's a delivery agreement that has been signed between our respective ministers. And that agreement, Public Works has released or given us the records of 44,000 hectares of land. Together with the HDA, we're busy looking at that. And as I've indicated, we'll come to the committee. On the audit of land, that is a process that's been undertaken as this with public enterprises, public works, and that. Priority projects. Chair, members of the committee, the department did identify priority projects, and as part of a process, the minister has requested that we ensure that those projects and money gets allocated so that we can complete that. But I think what we need to be able to understand and look at it, it must be within the context of the provincial and the national picture, because I think what you don't want to do is to upset the allocation formula, because provinces themselves sort of have their own priorities, which I think we need to marry and balance between that. But it's an issue. I don't know if I've left out any other issues. Sorry. On the issue of tribal land, specifically that agreement that we signed with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, and it covers the issue of communal land and tribal land. And I think the issue is what we've said as the department is we want to be able to respect the authority, particularly of COCTA, that's Traditional Affairs, as well as Rural Development. So the agreement that Minister Sekhwale has got is that if the Department of Human Settlements identifies that land, what you want to be able to do is to ensure that Minister Sipeta and Quinty take their respective roles in terms of releasing that, but it includes that land. And we've had some relative success in some of the provinces in our engagements, because the Department of Traditional Affairs has now been fully constituted and is a separate department under Minister Sipeta. So we're hopeful. And there's this agreement, this delivery agreement that we have.
For me, Chair, just to comment on the issue of systems not talking, I think it's important to make specific reference to outcome 8, which has been one of the critical areas of focus for department as a new area of strategic focus to try and align our work with the provinces. I think the issue of a concurrent function for human settlements has been a challenging one. And the systems, we hope that they will now be talking, because our minister now has entered into the agreement in terms of outcome 8 with all MECs in the provinces. And what has transpired in the agreement that has been signed with the minister and the president was to reflect on specific targets that will be performed in terms of the upgrading of informal settlements and various housing projects that will be undertaken in terms of that agreement. And that will assist in ensuring that systems are talking. Otherwise, this has been a challenge for this particular annual report in terms of 09/10. The other issue that will also assist with this process of outcome aid is to then ensure that the strategic coordination between all other relevant departments, particularly in relation to bulk infrastructure, because most of the projects that have not been continuing or standing, I think one member raised an issue of houses standing empty with no people occupying. If you were to do a proper analysis of most of those projects, you will realize that at the core issue of a problem is the bulk infrastructure. And in most instances, some of the projects were approved, but there was no proper planning. And again, the issue of planning was raised. There was no proper planning that has been associated with these projects. Hence, some of them are not closed off or have been started but never completed and so forth. I'm just saying, moving forward, the new developments that have taken place are meant to assist us to begin to deal with some of the issues in a much more effective way. And that will also assist with the aligning of our budget in terms of the new mandate of the department. Because as we speak, we are still using the housing budget department, but in essence, the elevation of our department to human settlements has taken place, but the mechanisms to realize the new mandate have not been put in place, and this will assist us to do that moving forward. So I'm trying to say, Chair, whilst there are so many challenges we have on this annual report, the developments that have taken place are beginning to deal with some of these issues much more effectively.
Thank you, Chair. On the question of on this slide, Chair, the column titled Unspent is actually figures. Those are rents. It's 53,921,000 rands. And the last column is percentages. In other words, that 53 million is what was not spent, and 68% is what was spent as against what was allocated. So the column on unspent, it actually reflects the actual amount in rands. And the last column is percentages of the expenditure as well.
Before I open for other people who are very clear about the issue of percentages and the money in rents, because even then, why out of 100% which was given to you to be utilized, you used only 68%. What about the other percentage? That is the bone condition for. That's why we're raising this matter. We are very clear about the percentages and the announcement and the money. And you see what DG, before I'll request you to be ready for the second round. You see what DG, I'll put some practical example about the issue. I was clarifying this one to you now. This thing of 16 is not talking to each other. I can pose the question on a practical example. The issue of Emakhaza in Western Cape, in terms of human settlement, what role have you played there where people they were given toilets without any whatever, outside toilets? Human settlements must play a role. Again, another challenge. Ekolweni, Plattenberg Bay, about 500 kilometers away from Western Cape, from Cape Town, but still in Western Cape, whereby about 5,000 people sharing two toilets. What is the role by you? Because some of the people are making a mistake as if we are not following. We are belonging, ourselves, most of us, whether we belong to each and every organization, but we belong to constituent offices. All these members, what the things which they have raised, they belong from the constituencies. They know exactly what is happening. West Panfit, we represent the provinces. I can put a lot of examples about our concern in terms of human settlement. And by saying that, let me allow the members maybe to add and to raise for the second round.
Chair, there's a question that I have not been responded to.
Okay, fine. I thought that would come this way.
Can they exhaust the question, because I have asked them, they have not responded to those questions. I talked about the research on the migration from rural areas. And the other one,
Do we have inspectors who inspect poor quality of houses that have been built? I raise also the issue of acronyms. Farm Resident Housing Assistance Program that has not been responded to. The cases of special that are investigated by the Special Investigating Unit that has not been responded to. And also, how do you capacitate those municipalities? We should be accredited.
Okay. Sorry, Chief. Switch it off, please. Thank you. I'll allow the department maybe to finalize the questions so that I can open for second round, please.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, on the research on migration, I think, I mean, that request, I mean, I've noted that one down now again. Apologies for not having responded. But we have got a chief director on research and policy, and that can be taken. I think the one issue is that, we can come back to the committee, perhaps later this year. I'm not quite sure of the schedule, but we can do that. Inspectors and quality, we've got the NHBRC, Chair, and the NHBRC is legislatively and compliantly tasked to ensure that. So those inspectors undertake that. Notwithstanding that, at a provincial level, each provincial department has got inspectors as well. So there's the NHBRC, there's the provincial inspectors, and then in instances you've got municipal inspectors that also undertake quality assurance. So those are the mechanisms that gets utilized in relation to that. As well as the fact that members will, as part of the grant, we ensure that there's enrollment of the projects with the NHBRC. So in respect of that, in relation to the structural guarantees that the NHBRC offers, each house that's delivered in terms of the subsidized or house constructed has got that 5-year guarantee in relation to that structural damage. In relation to the Farm Worker Residence Assistance Program, Chair, we've provided the policy framework, and we've also, as part of this, developed the rural voucher scheme and developed that. What we are in the process of doing at the moment, together with the Rural Housing Loan Fund, is to look at the implementation mechanisms. We've given them the deadline that we want to be able to activate that program come 1st of April 2011, so that particularly in relation to rural households and communities, that we can offer another perhaps better viable option for them to undertake house construction. So that's there. But also in relation to farm residents, that program has been and it's a matter that is taken very, very seriously, not only by the department but by the minister. In fact, the minister has asked for a farmers summit to specifically deal with this whole issue of farm residents and ensuring that farm workers, who are probably the most vulnerable of our communities in relation to exploitation, development, and even economic and social victimization. So that's a serious, and not only from that, but I think all of us in relation to that. The SIU investigation, Chair, as I've indicated previously, I mean, there's a number of investigations underway, and it covers contractors, covers government employees, it covers fraud in terms of systems, and as well as referrals. We can provide, and I think it is best if, in fact, we get a presentation. station to yourself so that you get a globular idea of what's happening in relation to that. In relation to municipal capacity, as part of the delivery agreement that's been signed with Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, the capacity they have undertaken, that as part of the municipal accreditation process, we do an assessment. And if we find in that assessment that a municipality has got capacity lacking, then the department has got resources, and together with Cooperative Governance, there's capacity programs. So depending on whether it's systems, whether it's technical, whether it's planning, and there's a number of programs. So, for example, one of the things the department does is that it assists the various municipalities with developing municipal human settlement development plans. It provides there's a municipal accreditation technical assistance grant that we give. So, for example, the metropolitan municipality that were assessed where there were deficiencies, there was grants provided. But I think what we do is we ensure that that's done in conjunction with and there's a coherent and coordinated approach to how that capacity building is undertaken. So I hope this time we've complied.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. I really don't want a thing where I'm not satisfied, but I know that you try to respond about these platinum areas. You know, we visited at Limpopo. In that area, it's very, very touchy situation whereby a lot of the platinum mines, whatever mines are there. But in terms of housing, a crisis. That's why we raise time and again that it's just them speaking to each other, but because even honorable member Dow raised that thing, you never responded to it directly. That so far, most of the companies which are mining in those particular areas are committing themselves that in terms of housing they would provide this. But they're not. If they do, it's minimal. Sometimes if they do, it's on racial basis, because a certain section of people will be given houses, but other people won't be given houses. I think if you can note that one. Second round, Honorable Member Dow. I'll go this way, Honorable Member Dow. I'll jump you, Mr. Jacobs. I'll come to you at the last because you were just speaking now. Honorable Grunewald, Honorable Mlenz, I'll start with Honorable Mlenz and he didn't have an opportunity. Honorable Grunewald, Honorable Felsman, you are the last one, Honorable Jacobs. In that line.
No, thank you very much. I think I'm sure the Honorable Grunewald will agree with me now. Because this is one thing that we have been very consistent with on the role of provinces, that maybe it is time that we amend the constitution, and the DA will be quite comfortable that we must do away with provinces, because we won't experience this kind of problems that we are experiencing. I mean, I'm just looking at the detailed annual report on page 66 and the challenges, finalization of implementation agreements, where it says that on the issue of the N2 gateway, it says that difficulties encountered in the transition from Tubelisha to HDA, it's one of them. And I would really want to know what are those difficulties for the finalization of the N2 gateway. What are these transitional difficulties? Because I had expected by now that transitional phase would have been concluded or completed. The second one itself, and that's where the Honorable Groeneveld comes in, the reluctance by the city of Cape Town to take over some of the responsibilities of the project, and the fact that the city of Cape Town's administration still awaits directives from its political principles, which in this instance is the Democratic Alliance. So who comes first here? Is it our people who are experiencing problems, or are we playing political games? And to what extent has the department been able, I mean, beyond the question of the city of Cape Town, attempted to engage these political principles? I know there was a meeting, for instance, between the minister, Tokyo, with Honorable Premier Helen Zille, where I guess one of the problems, besides that dispute on land or whatsoever, one of the central issues was the question of the N2 gateway. So it would be quite interesting to know the level of implementation of some of the agreements that were entered into between the two politicians in relation to this particular issue. Honorable Chair. And then the second one, I understand the problem of the Radom Park now, this question of the bulk infrastructure and exactly what is happening in Kimberley. But you see, the context in which I raised my comment earlier on was on the basis of this understanding, because initially it was reported that bulk infrastructure is a problem when the whole issue started. And then there was that thing where, because of the nature of the project, we're looking at rental housing stock, we're looking at social housing. You know, it was a combination of all aspects that had to do with provision of housing for our people, including rental housing. And that is where now the minister went on a crusade, especially the former minister then, Honorable Lindiwe Sisulu, entering into agreements with the private sector to play a role in some of these identified projects in provinces. And in the Northern Cape, only Radom Park, there was a celebrated partnership between the municipality of Zolplatje and the department, together with Absa Bank, where it was celebrated that there was an agreement. And central to that agreement was the role of Absa in releasing or investing resources for infrastructure development. Now, my question is, how far is that going? Was it just a publicity exercise? I mean, let it be said that it was not true. If Absa pulled out, let it be said. If the municipality reneged on the agreement, let it be said. But at least let us know what is the nature of the problem. Because the way it was structured or communicated, it was like a sealed matter between Absa, the municipality, and the provincial department of housing then. Thank you very much.
Honorable Ndenzana.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Apologies in advance, Chairperson. I'm not very well. I caught this. So. What? No, it was after the reshuffle. My name is up here.
Talk to me.
Sure. Chairperson, let me start on slide 18. This is just a clarification question. This slide talking about the annual performance report, 2009-2010. It links, of course, with the acronyms, which I haven't yet had them being explained. And unfortunately, for me, it's good that UNAVITAO got the document, even though late with me, it's not. And I do not know that maybe the department did it deliberately, that we either do not get it or we get information late so that we cannot interrogate it and dig deep into questions. But this role on performance not determined, what does that mean? When you say performance not determined, why? Then on the highlights of achievements, Chair, one would have liked to see some kind of practical implementation of the name change from housing to human settlement, not negating the fact that a concept document has been developed, but I don't think we're more interested in documents more than seeing implementation. I could go through all the highlights, Jefferson. Nothing talks to human settlement as human settlement. It's all about housing. In this second document, when one is looking at the housing delivery, which one comes first? This is some kind of a question which is just, you know, cropping in my mind because I couldn't balance things yet. There's the servicing of sites and the building of houses. Can it happen, Chair, that there are houses which are built before or on unserviced sites? Because when you look at the trends here, you would notice that the number of sites serviced throughout the provinces is less than the number of houses built. I'm asking this question deliberately because I know, but I want to have an answer from the department. I know in one municipality where I reside, when you are talking servicing sites, people will just run away from you. They just do not know if ever sites, you know, get serviced before houses are built. On this question also, which I haven't yet had it answered thoroughly related to the FIU, but let me put this question the other way around, linking it with one of the reasons for understanding, because in your reasons for understanding, there is a delay there by FIU to produce and submit invoice, which then becomes an audit query, Chairperson, if I understand. Now, one would like to know the daily relations or how are relations between the department and the SIU? Do you just wait and get reports, you wait for them, they do whatever, or there's some kind of constant interaction? There is a slide which has been shown there for quite some time, which was indicating DORA. But I'm not debating that because, correctly speaking, we are busy debating the division of revenue in terms of its consideration. But one is interested in the disaster relief fund. Do provinces apply for this fund as and when there is a disaster, or is their funding allocated per province for the disaster relief or what? Because when you look there, only one province. I'm not raising that. KZN is my neighbor, and not necessarily literally that, but one would like to know why. Maybe if a prince make a call, it's unfortunate not here. We would get more as to why only KZN and getting that one. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think at this stage, the whole of South Africa is looking into the Western Cape, what happened here and what did not happen here. And Honorable Tau has mentioned something, and I must react on it. I know it's not a political issue here, but I think in the Western Cape there's a lot of things going very well, and there are silence about that. And they are complaining about a few toilets is not being built in the right way. But if we are looking in the rest of South Africa, I'm telling you, it is going much worse in a lot of the provinces. And if you're looking into Burgersfort, what happened there, the houses people are living in, if you are looking into the Northwest province again in Swahing, thousands of people are staying there with no water, 500 meters from them. If you're looking in Stilfontein, in the mining areas, things are going very, very bad there. And the ruling party is in charge there. So I do not know why are you complaining. If you're looking into the houseboat methods in South Africa, we have oversight visit in the beginning of the year in Pretoria, at different places where they are working in different methods of house building, maybe faster and more stronger than the traditional houses of brick and clay. So I want to know how far is the department with these projects? Are they implemented in South Africa, and where, and is it successfully? Thank you very much.
Honorable Feldman.
I don't think that questions, maybe just clarity, you know. I mean, we do have the government or the ruling party, whatever you call them. There are so many programs, institutions, but it doesn't fulfill the core business of building houses. It is good to say that housing delivered figures 226. How many of these houses are occupied and well? Is there quality control, quality certificates? I think we have to shift our mindset for quantities. Really, I think everything is intact. We talk about billions of rand. We won't say the department or whoever is incompetent. I think maybe that the mindset of the whole thing must be focused. And if you look at the program performance, there's nothing mentioned. Administration, housing policy, research, monitoring, there's no quality surveying, quality control. Which is it's a priority in building. And I can suggest maybe to get from the big companies, Marion Roberts and them, look at the document, how they are performing, how they are doing things. I mean, the secure areas, people are staying there. They're paying 4,000 to 5,000 a month. But they're staying there. It's not cracking. I think we must slow down and change the mindset. Really. Because all the things are intact. The money is there. The land are there. So let's work on the mindset and just go in another direction. I thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Member Jacobs.
Thanks, Chair. Honourable Khunaval, do I have to respond to what you said?
About
okay, let me. with regards to provincial delivery targets, there are sites and houses that have been, I don't know the sites whether they have been serviced and houses that have been built. I just want to know what action has been done with these sites. Because as far as I know, sites were the competence of municipalities. Human settlement will just come and build houses. And now, because if you look in the Free State, when it comes to sites, there is nothing. It's only the houses that were built. So it means where they built those houses because sites were serviced, and they were serviced by whom? And also, if we are saying we are servicing sites, I think the number of sites and the number of houses, they should match. But there is a difference. You find that, it's, for instance, the Eastern Cape, 11 sites, and but the houses there, it's 18,000. So why do we have that anomaly? Thanks. Can you get clarification on that?
Okay. Did you, before I give you to respond now, I want you to add one or two. You see, DG, number one, people must acknowledge that we are having two houses in Parliament, which is in A and so big. And these houses, some people, they thought that there is a senior house and a junior house. These are equally so. And our matters are so serious, because some of the bills, they can't go through without coming through to this one. Therefore, the answers, or some of the questions, most of the questions, or all of the questions which are asked by the honorable members are so serious as well. Because coincidentally, they are direct from those particular areas which are affected. By saying that, I'll continue to add one or two. I thought that you'll also indicate about your staff, shortage of the staff and issue of the gender. Because to us, we take it very, very serious as part of our policy matter. For an example, you see the delegation from your side, which came unfortunately unconfidential from our side, some of the female colleagues which are with us, both of them, they are ill. We do have them. But if you look at your own delegation, yes. Okay, fine. But it shows that there are still challenges from your side. As well as the issue of vacancies, because you said nothing about the vacancies, I'll make an example. In terms of to ensuring compliance with the national norms and standards, you indicated that support could not be provided to other projects to ensure that they complied with the national norms and standards owing to the staff shortage. Why do you have a staff shortage? Why? Because we believe that the issue of the staff shortage is not so a great concern. You are the ones who are supposed to make recommendations in terms of the budget and the like. If you show there is a difference between the shortage of the budget and the shortage of the staff, if maybe you can clarify there that why staff, because this thing is having a negative impact in terms of the online function, of which is at the end affecting the service delivery. So if you can maybe clarify us that why. And as I indicated, the issue of the staff, and also, see, my concern, you never, there was a question about the issue of this thing of monitoring and the like, that some cases, whatever, but you never indicated that how many cases which are still not yet resolved, and if there are some of the officials who should be charged, also to clarify us that they are maybe, because there in your presentation you spoke about the external only, you never spoke about the internal problems, challenges, if you do have internal challenges. Maybe you can clarify us as well in that regard. Over to you, DG.
Thanks, Chair.
Maybe let me deal with the issue that relates to documentation in terms of circulation. It's really a perception, Chair. We have no intention whatsoever from a normal departmental practice not to send information in advance to any committee of government and parliament. So we will apologize if some members did not get document on time, but I can assure all members that that's never an intention of this department to. We don't believe that we should not give information that you need in advance so as to prepare for such meetings. So that's never the intention of a department, and it's not our normal practice. And then the issue of monitoring in relation to the investigation that the SIU is doing, Chair. I think I thought that at some point there was a presentation done on the SIU investigation. If not, Chair, I think we may do a very comprehensive presentation to the committee and reflect at a provincial level, national level, the progress that has been made to date in terms of the investigations. As you all know, that in terms of the briefing that was done by the minister, we were quite specific in terms of the numbers and the officials affected at different provinces, and the measures that have been taken from a disciplinary point of view in dealing with the situation, because there are different categories. So we can give that detail should the committee require. And then the issue of your relationship, Chair, I must say that we have a very good working relationship with the SIU. The challenge that we have had in terms of payment was as a result of their system. If one were to be specific, there is a practice that we, from an internal audit perspective, that we decided to change, and that of paying the money in advance before the work is done. So when we're changing that, in consultation with them, it did affect the payment system that we're using. But in terms of relationship, we have periodic meetings that we meet with them and discuss issues. There is a dedicated team which I lead from the department that meets with a dedicated team from SIU, where we meet and clarify issues and issues of payment and so forth. So we are dealing with issues that at times become a problem from the payment perspective for them. But the relationship, I must say, is very good, it's very sound, it's very cordial and very progressive. The issue around the staff shortages, Chair, in terms of the work that we do, I'll say that in terms of the current structure, I'll say the vacancy level is basically on about 20%. Some of the challenges that we have had is that in some branches there are strategic vacancies that were not filled, which in one way or another do affect our work. But the process of expediting the critical posts have started. But in the same vein, Chair, we've been very mindful of not just filling posts for the sake of filling posts in relation to our new mandate as a department, because there's a new capacity that is required and there's a new strategic direction that the department wants to take based on the new mandate and the outcome aid process that has taken place. Some of the vacancies that exist, we are also reviewing them in terms of our new mandate and in terms of our new strategic direction that we are taking as a department. But I will say the vacancy rate is around about 20%, which is not necessarily a big vacancy rate in terms of our operation. And again, that will then relate in terms of the issue raised by a member insofar as the mindset as well, because if indeed we want to deal with the backlog from a human settlements perspective, the issue of a mindset becomes very critical. And again, it's linked into the alternative technology. I mean, recently, the Human Settlements Department hosted a three-day conference where we invited different service providers who are focusing on alternative technologies from a human settlements perspective.
and why that conference was arranged. That's about 3 weeks ago. Why it was arranged, it was specifically to begin to say, what is it that from this particular sector we can do and do differently from what we have been doing in the last 15 years. It is upon the realization that if we continue with brick and mortar approach as we have been doing, there is very little that we can achieve, because remember that you're also chasing a moving target. So almost every year informal settlements are coming up and our backlog gets static in terms of the funding that we have. So it's a very difficult situation. So if you don't change your methodology of doing with service delivery, 10 years later we'll be still in the same situation. So we have come into that realization, and we are saying the mindset, both from a government perspective as well as from the people themselves, need to begin to change now, and we need to examine alternative technologies. And what we are doing, though, is to make sure that people don't dump, because there is a huge market gap in this sector. People don't just dump alternative technologies without being properly examined. In that conference, we invited service providers that we work with, government ones, NHBRC, to give the process of ensuring that quality is not lost in those alternatives. Also, the issue of encouraging our provincial colleagues to make sure that they begin to look into this quite more effectively in their approach in terms of procuring those services and so on. So we are beginning, that was the part of saying, let's change the mindset. Even the housing code that you are using, let's make sure that it does create a conducive environment for people who want to come with alternative technologies to take advantage of that. So we are quite mindful of that, and it's a reality that if we don't deal with now, then we'll have a problem. So the issue of just producing quantities from the sake of doing them without reviewing our approach, we may find ourselves in a similar situation in the near future, and our people on the ground may not benefit. I'm not sure if colleagues want to just add on other issues that have been raised.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, in relation to the point raised around the question of finalizing the transitional issues on the N2 gateway, what I can confirm is that that's been concluded, particularly in relation to transfer functions from Tbilisi to the provincial government. And the Housing Development Agency is acting as project manager on that one. On the level of implementation on the N2 gateway, I think the point we need to get on sort of sort out in relation to the N2 gateway is that in relation to the anomaly that led to the N2 gateway being implemented in the manner we've now found the happy medium where the province is the developer. The national department provides the funding and policy framework, and the city acts as implementing agent, and that process has gone through. But yes, I mean there are some issues that are being dealt with, and at an administrative and political level, there's a commitment. So, but once again, there's issues related to land, park, and all those things which is impacting on N2 gateway. Lerato Park, I mean, the partnership with APSA still exists. So there's still commitments that's been made. And I think maybe Chair, it's best that I've identified three or four points that we need to come back to you and give you clear indication, because what I don't want to do is speculate, give you half-baked answers, or just sort of brush off. I would want, perhaps maybe, if the committee we will write to you and give you a full report on Lerato Park, we'll give you a full indication of what's happening in relation to the N2 gateway, the mining issue you've raised around, and together with Member Tao, there's specific issues around that, together with the Northwest, a progress report on Northwest. I think on the issue of mining, and I'm not sure if you're referring to Burgess Fort, Chair, but that is a particular, I mean, there's huge amount of pressures in relation to the platinum, as well as Lephalale, and yes, I think the point is we need to be able to respond particularly in relation to those that are most vulnerable, so informal, communities who settle in informal settlements, and you'll see example, the agreement that the minister signed with the president together with the provinces, there's a specific emphasis on informal settlement upgrading. In relation to the issue of performance not determined, the Auditor General has indicated to us, and we've agreed, you either achieve something or you don't achieve something. And yes, I think to the member that raised that, we agree it's vague, and in terms of reporting, it's something that the Auditor General has asked us to address, particularly in relation to that issue there. What comes first? I think in relation to the services and houses issue, Chair, what happened was members will remember that post-94 and even pre-94, you had a number of sites, service stands from the IDT together with the Urban Foundation, and also what was called, and in some areas, the TPA towns and the R293 towns. You had a number of communities and areas where there were service stands and people were then given that, and there were no houses constructed or superstructures. That's why you in South Africa at the moment, particularly in relation to subsidized and the areas that we have, you've got a deficit of houses, but you've got a number of sites that are serviced with no houses constructed. Also, that process is also has continued because in the informal settlement upgrading program or process, Chair, you go through a number of stages, and that stages is where you plan, you then service, and then you construct. And I think provinces and municipalities utilize that process, because if you want to be able to stretch your budget, if you want to be able to provide, if you want to stabilize areas, you provide communities with water and sanitation in year one, and in year two you come back and you construct the house. That's the process, particularly in formal settlement upgrading. So that's why you'll see that the site serviced and the houses, there's no correlation. What the provinces have done is that they've said, well, we need to start now catching up on this backlog of houses that have not been constructed. So in the last couple of years, you'll see that there's been this turnaround. So if you look at the period 94 to 2000, you had lots more site serviced than houses constructed. Post-2004, you have a lot more houses constructed than site serviced. That's in order to catch up with the backlog. So you'll find that's what's happened. The other point in relation to that is sometimes, yes, in a greenfield area, you know, if there's a new development or a new area being developed, you have a simultaneous site servicing and house construction. It's done in one, and that's what happens. That has particularly been so because in terms of our integrated human settlement development program, where we said we give communities houses, services, roads, schools. So in areas like for example Gauteng and some areas of Limpopo and your home province in Mpumalanga, if you go to the one in Emalahleni, there's those areas where you have that. The disaster relief fund, that was a special once-off allocation to the KZN, which was DORAD. And that was, community members will remember that there was I think it was 2008, 2009, there was, KZN suffered from a number of tornadoes and sort of disasters, particularly in the Midlands and some of the South Coast areas. And that was the 150. That was a special allocation. On the issue of, you know, we have found, for example, that you had.
Mr. Mlinzane, you know what I'll request, honourable member, please. Note what you wanted to raise. Let's leave them to finish, and then we'll give you an opportunity.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, in relation to the just the other issue on I'm going through the throwing the no water, I mean, there have been instances, and yes, it's something that has been highlighted, and the department's taken action. So, for example, in some areas, you've had houses constructed without services, and we've redressed that. So, I think in the Eastern Cape, you've had that, and I think in the Northwest, and those issues receive attention, particularly in relation to Stoofontein as well. I mean, the DG covered the point of the alternative technologies. I think we're weighing up this issue of quality versus quantity, as Member Feltzman said, and I think it's a mindset issue. It's how do we balance our resources by ensuring dignity and quality and giving people or communities the level of respect and equality in terms of what we want to deliver. And it's about the sustainability of what we want to do. When we talk about site serviced, what do we talk about? I mean, in terms of that, it's water, sanitation, secure title, and then your gravel roads, and then your tarred bus route. Where a municipality has got sufficient money, they tar all the roads in that area. Electricity is funded through the nursery grant, and that provides that comes later on, but it's an issue that's been dealt. So that's what the package is in relation to that. I'm not sure. I hope I've covered everything, and I don't know if Mr. Mingo or T.
Give it back to the members if they wanted to. Like, I'll give you, Mr. Mleza, first an opportunity to raise what you wanted to raise.
Thanks, Chairperson. It was a follow-up question on this explanation given on the disaster relief fund. One would then like to know, Chairperson, if the department has a mechanism of looking at maybe the gravity of that particular disaster and then therefore taking decisions. As to yes, as the department we can assist, and so on. I'm raising this with an understanding that when you are talking declarations made by the various provinces on disaster, that has created a huge backlog. And if you go, for instance, in the case of Eastern Cape, you would notice that there's a backlog on disaster-related kind of housing challenges, which haven't yet been met now. So that's why I was asking as to, do you have some kind of a mechanism avoiding a situation where whoever would jump to the department at a national level and say, look, come assist, and then you see yourselves caught up. That's true.
Anybody? Any question before I add? Honorable Member Jacobs.
Yeah, I want to get an explanation on this issue of sites and the houses that are built. Do you apply for separate funding, or it's a whole package? If you want to build a house, you include for sites to be serviced. The other one, in the area where I come from, they are busy building dilapidated houses, old houses. Where do they get that funding from? Is it a special project? I don't know. Thank you.
Before I give it to the department, I think to honorable members, I think that was the last round.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. From my side, you know, there is a section which we are just ignoring most of the time, which is a public and private rental houses. And with your input, sometimes you don't give us enough information. I'll put a practical example. I've forgotten the name of the building. In terms of housing, there are buildings which are owned by the government, in particular in metros. And those buildings, some of them, the department have spent billions of rands to revamp them. But it is not clear that how many buildings are affected and how many buildings and which are those buildings. It is not clear. And also, it is alleged that some of these buildings are illegally occupied. So what role is the department playing in order to make sure that these buildings are reserved for the correct purpose, and these buildings are occupied by relevant people? For example, if you go to the inner cities in the metros, it is alleged that some of these buildings are occupied by illegally people as well as illegally immigrants. I'll put an example, but I don't say that that building is an illegally whatever. If you go to Joburg to Bondi, I don't know who owns Bondi, find that in the windows they are washing everything. It's dirty now. Very, very dirty. So, what role is the department playing in that regard in order to safeguard that everything are going to relevant people? I've got a lot of questions, but for a day, I'll pause there so that I can give you an opportunity maybe to explain for us that how many of those projects. And then last question. Look, there's something very interesting. I think that's a question we must make sure that we raise it somewhere. We've saw the minister in particular in some of the areas was busy in some of the houses, in terms of the houses which were wrongly or having some challenges, which he ordered that those houses to be destroyed. We never got the amount of the total of those, that how many houses were affected and how many were being destroyed, how many were being rebuilt, and how many houses are still to be processed. And some of these houses are under this thing, the term of using cheap material and etc., etc. I'll give it to you so that we finalize this matter for the day. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, for the last round. We are putting together, maybe let me start with the last issue on the rectification program, because what has transpired is that the minister has made a national pronouncement around shoddy houses, quality houses, and poor workmanship. And at the national level, we are now putting a program which will be working together with the institution that is in charge of this particular area, which is NHBRC, in terms of doing an entire rectification program. But it's also important to note that some provincial departments have also taken upon themselves to put in place some measures in dealing with those. But as we have indicated, Chair, we will give you sufficient information, a total picture of what is happening in the area of rectification throughout the country and what different provinces are doing with different projects to deal with the situation. And I think it's also critical, Chair, to say that in the same area, it was realized that some projects were never enrolled with NHBRC from the beginning, which was also a problem, because that's a process that must be followed. And when we go to the database of the NHBRC, it was discovered that in some provinces these projects were not enrolled, which is a serious illegal process. So we'll give you a total picture in the future around this particular matter. Neville, the issue of disaster relief fund.
Thank you.
Issues.
Yeah. Thanks. Chair, in relation to disaster relief, as committee members and yourself will be aware, disaster relief is based on proclamations and declarations by premiers, and then there's also the National Disaster Relief Fund, and that's a presidential prerogative in relation to that. So our reaction to that as a department is based on whether or not there's a formal declaration of a disaster or an area to be declare a disaster area and particular relief funding made available. The department does not specifically make allocations available based on the fact that our budget on an annual basis is allocated. So if there's any additional money from the fiscus for disaster relief, then it then gets appropriated as and when required, as and when that happens. The other important thing is that in relation to that, the disaster relief management is managed through the Department of Cooperative Governance, and we will play that. But yes, there are instances, and there's the emergency housing processes. So it depends on how provinces, based on how severe and what the severity is, they can and they have it within their prerogative to do that in consultation with the department. So it's one that's based on what the need is and the urgency of that. In relation to the planning based on sites and services, it depends on how the provinces allocate that. So once we get the business plan, that business plan will indicate to us what the province intends spending on sites to be serviced and what houses to be constructed. So that's how that's done. So the money is allocated appropriately. I think as we sit, depending on the province, depending on land costs and those kind of things, it's approximately between 24,000 and 30,000 to service a site. And then to construct a house, the total amount's what, 63,000 that gets. So that's the amount. It depends on how a province within its municipal areas wants to and what are the focus areas in relation to that. Dilapidated houses, I mean, the point, Mem Jacobs, is that the approval gets done for projects and it also gets done for beneficiaries. So if a house is not received or a beneficiary has not, you know, if the house that a person wants to repair has not been a recipient of a previous subsidy and those things, then that house can be. And I think the point is that there's a lot of dilapidated houses, and it's a point that the department. So, for example, Transnet, or some of these railway houses, there are special, there's project applications that get made, and the province then approves it and it gets funded. So if there's dilapidated houses, depending on whether or not it's emergency, what the cause of the dilapidation, it can form part of a rectification program, or it can form part of a project. It just depends on what it is. I don't know what the circumstances. If we get the information, we can assist and provide the necessary assistance, and particularly in the Free State with HOD Mukwena on that issue. Thanks. I mean, in relation to that, my colleague just drawn my attention that in sometimes dilapidated houses, it depends, and that's why I say, you know, the circumstances. So if it's part of the discount benefit scheme, and if it has, there's a necessity to actually have it repaired. So it might be, I don't know what the circumstances are. So it's a dilapidated house, you know, it's part of the discount benefit scheme. If it's dilapidated, then you have families refuse to take ownership, and then it has to be repaired and then only transferred. So that might be another case. I don't know. But we'll assist.
Honorable members, the department, ladies and gentlemen, lady and gentlemen, I think we came to an end of our today's briefing, and hoping and trusting that we were well empowered, and believing that the department, maybe in some areas where we raise our concern, will make a follow-up as well as to supply us
with more information. And without wasting any time, I'd like to thank you all for participating for today. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.